Karen Miriam Goldberg, the Kansas Poet Laureate from 2009 to 2013, is the author or editor of nearly 20 books that include fiction, nonfiction, memoir, and anthologies. Whether she's exploring landscape, ecology, her family's history with the Holocaust, or living with cancer, Goldberg demonstrates that language can influence the world, a belief that led her to develop the Transformative Language Arts Program. She talks about that and reads from two of her poetry books, Landed and Chasing Weather, Tornadoes, Tempest, and Thunderous Skies in Word and Image, a collaboration with photographer Stephen Locke. She also reads from The Sky Begins at Your Feet, a memoir on cancer, community, and coming home to the body. That's ahead on New Letters on the Air, a production of New Letters Magazine at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. I'm Angela Elam, and while I was a 2015 Simons Public Humanities Fellow at the University of Kansas Hall Center for the Humanities, I talked with Karen Miriam Goldberg at Kansas Public Radio about her work, including the book Poem on the Range, a poet laureate's love song to Kansas that gives insight into the tumultuous period when Kansas Governor Sam Brownback made a drastic move.
The governor eliminated the Kansas Arts Commission. The poet laureate was a program with the Kansas Arts Commission. So when all of this happened with the Poet Laureate program, I knew we had to make a new home for it. And my first thought was the Kansas Humanities Council. A lot of state Poet Laureate programs are with Humanities Councils. And our wonderful council was quite interested. But let's just say there were some things to get through first. I mean, we basically had to have the governor's office sign off on the Poet Laureate program. And during this whole time of fundraising and doing Poet Laureate programming and looking for a new home and waiting to move into that new home, over 18 months passed.
And you did not let it stop you.
Well, I tried not to, you know. I've learned the hard way in life that if you really believe in something, you just keep going. And luckily, nobody from the governor's office told me to step down as Poet Laureate, so I kept going. And I basically crowdsourced the whole budget in 3 weeks. And it just so happened that the projects I had been working on at that time very nicely brought together poets from all over the state and gave us platforms to really speak to the importance of poetry and other writing and other arts when it comes to really enlivening our lives and helping us find greater meaning. So, as I tell people, I kind of carried the Poet Laureate program in my pocket. I'm not saying that bad political things for the arts that happen are good things, but we make of the materials life gives us what we can, and some very marvelous things happened. One of them was the Kansas Renga Project, To the Stars Through Difficulties. We didn't realize how much that time would be about the difficulties part. But we had put out a book a year before, Begin Again, 150 Kansas Poems to Celebrate Kansas's Sesquicentennial. And the Renga was basically one giant poem in 150 voices. And that came out really right in the middle of living in the vortex of what would happen next. And we did readings all over the state, and dozens of poets would jump in their cars, or we'd all get in my van together and drive outrageous distances to read one or two poems each. And it really built a very enduring poetry community and just gave people a platform to live out why the arts matter.
Let's talk a little bit about The Sky Begins at Your Feet, which was your memoir. It came out in 2009. And this is really a good look not only into your life and what you were involved with when you found out that you had breast cancer, but it also touches on a lot of the work that you do in the realm of poetry. Everything from transformative language arts to your involvement with the environment and some different groups. The Continental Bioregional Congress was meeting, and you were very involved with that, in the Kansas Area Watershed Council. So I think it gives a real look into your personal life, but also the life of your communities. It was really a good read, in spite of the fact that you went through some real hardships, but all the way through, there was a sense that you never gave up hope, and that is something that is very sustaining. And I thought I would start with the very opening, and you were facing a mastectomy.
And then it was bad news that kept getting worse for a while.
It was. It really was.
This is a section that is part of the preface where I start out talking about what it's like to be a body that doesn't look like the bodies we were told we should look like. And it's really about having surrendered my breast. It begins with the line, "I don't know how to be a body these days." And then somewhere in the middle, I say this, "That's part of the problem. In my memory, below the surface of words and rational understandings, breasts are part of being erotic. The breasts are a playground of great sensation of lushness. Without them, what does it mean to make love? What does it mean to love my own body? So I am trying to love my body for what it is now. Let the love I feel for it, the tenderness for my moving fingers on the keyboard, the appreciation for the strength of my legs to carry me for miles on an early spring day, the wonder at the softness of my skin, the shapes I leave in the blankets, let this love be enough. Let this love show me the ways to sing the body electric, to write the body erotic. Let me learn this way of loving what's imperfect from the land and sky around me, the best mirror to show us that what we do to the environment, we also do to ourselves. As well, the earth where I live is the best teacher when it comes to persevering through the seasons with the kind of grace that celebrates life, however it comes, in the icy wind midwinter that makes the windows tremble, the explosion of lilac one particularly slow spring, the reddening grasses late fall, the black sheen of the crow midday when he shoots across the sky to examine the latest addition to our compost pile. Life just wants to live, so goes the old saying, and this desire makes for tremendous innovation."
Karen Miriam Goldberg, reading from her memoir on cancer, community, and coming home to the body. It's called The Sky Begins at Your Feet. And this is New Letters on the Air. "The Sky Begins at Your Feet" is a quote from an essay. Tell us a little bit about the writer.
Ann Herbert, she's somebody who had a lot of essays and a lot of other writing years ago in what was then called the Whole Earth Review. And it was a very bioregionally focused publication. It comes from looking at where we live and learning from our most local earth and sky, and the local earth and sky that compose our bodies, who we are and how to live. And I just always love that line, "The sky begins at your feet." And to me, it feels like a very open space, Midwestern kind of line.
It's so funny because so much of your being, I think, is captured by the sky and the horizon. You're really a woman of the prairies, even though you're not from here. You're from New York.
That's
where you grew
up.
And New Jersey. You grew up there. Talk a little bit about your kinship to the land that's here. Now, you're married to a, what, fifth-generation Kansan.
Yeah, I kind of married into the prairie. You know, I grew up my first 8 years in Brooklyn. My dad had a store in the subway arcade of Nassau and Fulton Street in New York City, 3 blocks from the World Trade Centers. I mean, we watched the towers go up and unfortunately watched them go down. But when I was 8, my family moved to central New Jersey in the suburbs. And although I have a lot of affection for New Jersey and I identify as a New Jerseyan, I very much felt when I was growing up that I was a little bit in the wrong place.
Oh, really?
And I really craved,
that.
Oh, yeah, I really craved being in more rural areas. My life plan was to return there with a journalism degree from the University of Missouri. But once I came out to the Midwest in 1979 to pursue that journalism degree, on the false premise that if you're a writer, you better become a journalist, because that's the only option you have. Let's just say life took another turn, And I also just fell in love with the sky and the expansiveness out here. And it spoke to what I also connected with growing up in New Jersey, where, although I lived in a housing development, I took long walks on my own and I would go to the edge of the development to get a better view of the horizon.
You mentioned a little bit in your memoir, The Sky Begins at Your Feet, that when you came to Lawrence the first time, you felt at home immediately.
I had a moment in, I believe it was 1982, where I was walking up the stairs to a porch, a house in East Lawrence where I was going to spend the night, and I felt this voice over my left shoulder that just said, "This is your home for the rest of your life." And that was the first time I was in Lawrence, and I met the man I eventually married and some of my closest friends and bioregional community the next day.
Wow.
So sometimes it's just one small thing that you're drawn to and you listen to, and then your whole life changes.
And The Sky Begins at Your Feet, you talk about when you first met your husband, the first time that you guys got together, you know, in quotes,
yeah.
There was a big thunderstorm. And one of the things that people may not know about this part of the world, we know about tornadoes, of course, but what people don't realize is how powerful thunderstorms can be. This magnificence of weather that we have here has propelled you on to the book that you have been working on with a photographer, Stephen Locke, called Chasing Weather: Tornadoes, Tempest, and Thunderous Skies in Word and Image. It's a gorgeous book.
Oh,
it is so incredibly beautiful.
We found each other in a way I never expected to find a collaborator on Facebook.
Oh, really?
Somebody suggested we be friends, and then I wrote to him that one of his images was poetic. And he had been thinking about asking a writer to collaborate with him, and as he tells the story, at the moment he thought, well, who better than the Poet Laureate of Kansas?
And so what year was this that you guys
2009.
Started planning? Mm-hmm. Oh, so it was your first year as Poet
My
Laureate.
My first year. Okay. And I had been thinking about working with a photographer. I had even asked a photographer who turned me down. And so he wrote me a minute later, just as I was getting ready to write him, and say, "Do you want to do a project together?" And we just started working together. We met a few weeks or months later, and now we've become close friends, and I've just learned so much from his photography and how he sees the world that has given me more nuanced and sometimes bigger and deeper ways to see the sky and the land. We've also been on tour with this book. I think we've done close to 20 presentations already.
Let's start with a poem from Chasing Weather that you wrote. It says, "For Stephen, Supercell."
Well, there's nothing like spending hours collaborating with somebody. And since then, we've gotten to spend many, many hours on road trips. And after hearing one another's stories about the losses we survived, I was really inspired to write this Supercell. Did you think your life was straight as this road, something that could be time-lapsed into a predictable gate? Did you try to map lightning, predict when the thunderhead will pause and fold in on itself? Have you pointed to a place in the clouds and said there, just before it turned into somewhere else? It's all nothing then Supercell, multiple strikes through the clouds while the tips of the grass shimmer. From the deep blue that narrates your life comes the pouring upward of white curves and blossoms. From the dark comes the thunder, then the violet flash. From the panorama of what you think you know comes the collapse of sky, falling on you right now whether you're watching the weather or not. The world dissolves, reforms. What comes surprises, motion moving all directions simultaneously, like the losses you carry, talismans strung through your days, singing of those you've loved, deep as the blue framing the storm. It rains for a moment in the field, in your heart. Then the weather stretches open its hand and says, here, this whole sky is forgiving."
I love that play on forgiving, because it's broken up, not forgiving,
but
as,
for giving.
Yeah. That's Karen Miriam Goldberg reading from the book Chasing Weather, and it's one of her poems called Supercell, dedicated to Stephen Locke, the photographer whose work is featured in this book. Some of the poems go so perfectly with the images, I thought, did she write this for this? But one that seemed to match the image so well, I noticed that it was a poem that was also in your earlier book, Landed. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wow, this must have been a process of creating new works and then finding some other works that were simpatico with what he had. Can you talk a little bit about what you guys did together?
Well, there's probably about 75 poems. And although I haven't counted, I would say 10, maybe 12 are old works, and everything else was something I wrote after staring at his photos for hours and hours. Stephen's photos are astonishing, and they're unlike any weather photos I've ever seen. He isn't a close distance chaser. He tries to be far enough away to really get the shape of the storm. And people who want a sample, just go to tempestgallery.com, T-E-M-P-E-S-T, gallery.com, and you can see what I mean.
Well, let's go to another poem, What the Sky is Made Of.
The sky is made of soft rain and hard light, the old yearning to be held, the ancient fear of not having enough, and the fountain of wind that says something's gone, something else is arriving. The sky is made of rock shattered finer than the smallest atoms of human memory. Air we call breath once we take it in and turn it to motion, anger, or song. The beating of hummingbird wings compose the sky, as well as the fluttering of muscle on muscle, the space in between the rain, the drum of the jackrabbit's heart. The sky is made of rivers before and after they became rivers.
What the Sky is Made Of, from the book Chasing Weather, a compilation of poetry and photographs by Karen Miriam Goldberg and Stephen Locke. You're listening to New Letters on the Air, and we're here in the KPR studios today. I want to skip back to The Sky Begins at Your Feet, your memoir. You went through a really scary period of time, as does anyone who has cancer, because, I mean, you had to have a double mastectomy. You go through those years of worrying about whether there's going to be a recurrence. In the meantime, you lost your father within that first year to pancreatic cancer. One of the anniversary dates, I marked this towards the end of the book because it talks about one of the initiatives that you have started, which has to do with sharing stories with others. So why don't we have you read this again? It's just an excerpt.
Toward the end of the book, I write about each anniversary for the first six anniversaries, because that's how people measure cancer, either as sizes of fruit or anniversaries or both. My anniversary falls on the meeting date of a transformative language arts writing group I lead for people with cancer. I look at the square table surrounded by seven faces and remember that the group last year had 12. Gone is the elegant retired nurse and lover of piloting planes who came last spring wearing beautiful pink sweaters and accented scarves, saving her energy all day from her breast to liver metastasized cancer for a chance to write stories about her life. Gone is the young mother of two small boys who had been told she was probably going to be okay, only to find, probably during the last days of her life, that she had a particularly aggressive kind of cancer that moved at lightning speed through her organs. Gone is the woman who gave other members tremendously wry and wise support when she was caught in extensive treatment for rectal cancer. I'm just a pain in the ass, she reminded us months before her death. In all these groups, at some point, someone brings up the proverbial hit-by-a-bus explanation of life's uncertainty. I said I had cancer, a man or a woman in my group will say, and my friend replied, well, I could die tomorrow if I was hit by a bus. Everyone in the group laughs or groans, talks about how much they hate that bus metaphor. Yeah, and you could get hit by a bus, but right now you're fine, and I have cancer. We spend a lot of time in these groups laughing and crying, probably as much time as we do writing. Often just introducing ourselves brings tears of relief. Here, people can write about whatever they want without having to protect loved ones. And tears of fear and exhaustion from living on a moving walkway. Those tears also come from caregivers who feel that monumental pressure to hold up the other, to put their fear and dread on a shelf so they can get in the kitchen and cook up something good to eat, feed the life that feeds them. I think of Linda, a writer and photographer who has been taking my Kansas City workshop throughout her late-stage ovarian cancer. Last week, Sue said to her, "You know, my breast cancer was caught early, and it's nothing compared to what you have. When I'm with you, I feel like I'm really okay." "I'm glad my dying makes you feel better," Linda said with a straight face, her pageboy wig distinguished as she catapulted us all in the kind of laughter that takes your breath away. Sue almost fell out of her chair, and I was laughing so hard I started crying. Maybe this has to do with how Linda's dying helps me cultivate perspective, giving up sweating the small stuff so much. But I suspect it has more to do with the courage I witness. Week after week, in all the workshops I do, the way that people are willing to take great risk in the stories they write and tell, how the veneer of what we think keeps us safe is gone in such workshops. What really matters is unearthing meaning, clearing the obstacles out of the way, including fear and doubt, insecurity, and low confidence, to feel more alive in the process of creation.
Karen Miriam Goldberg, reading from The Sky Begins at Your Feet. And this is New Letters on the Air.
Linda is still alive and was at my workshop a few weeks ago.
Oh, that's so exciting.
Yeah. I do these workshops at Kansas City at Turning Point.
You teach in the Goddard Creative Writing Program, right?
No. I teach in Goddard's Graduate Institute that has an individualized MA program as well as health arts and social innovation and sustainability. So it's kind of everything I care about in one place. And I founded and coordinate a program called Transformative Language Arts. And I've been working with that since 2000. And it's a MA program. It's low residency, as all our programs are, so people live anywhere in the country or world and design their studies around their passions and community and livelihoods. It's a program very focused on how we use writing, storytelling, theater, performance, spoken word, anything with language for improving the world in some small or big way, for community building, for spiritual exploration, for activism, for finding ways to cultivate greater connection among people or more clarity or direction within ourselves. I work with writers and people involved in all kinds of arts all the time. And we look at how you can bring that work to your community. People who make a living doing community writing workshops, collaborating with organizations, consulting, coaching, all manner of things, performing, touring, working in schools and nursing homes, prisons, and many settings to use the language arts in a transformative way. For example, some of the people I've worked with were in the Northwest Ecological Writing and Storytelling Workshops. People in the Northeast who are using writing and activism to help young women claim their power and their direction with greater strength. And the workshops I've been doing for 12 years at Turning Point, which is a fabulous center in the Kansas City area, right on State Line, provides amazing services for people living with serious illness. Those workshops are part of my transformative language arts work. So people all over the country who are also finding ways to make a living, we talk a lot about right livelihood, the Buddhist concept of making a living that does no harm, but that also draws on your gifts and allows you to serve and follow whatever it is you feel like you're in conversation with in this life. And it also helps language artists cross-pollinate because so often writers and storytellers don't mingle. Kansas City, we have this incredible writers community, and the National Storytelling Network has moved its national headquarters right there too. And so it creates kind of a clearing in the woods where people can speak to each other and also figure out that age-old question of how do you make a living and find community and take care of yourself and not go out of your mind when you're an artist in this culture?
Well, we've talked so much about collaborating with other people and coming together to share. We should mention an earlier book of yours called Landed. Mm-hmm. And it was published actually right here in Lawrence by Mammoth Publications. And what drew me to this one is that it actually has a CD included in it. You've collaborated with the musician Kelly Hunt on several occasions.
Yes, we both have a very similar philosophy and yearning for how to create, that you just throw yourself onto the mercy of the page or the piano, whatever you're working with. Take a lot of healthy risk, see what comes through, listen carefully, abandon all plans on a whim, and keep going. It's just such a gift. Also, for a writer, it's a outrageously happy thing that you write something and a day later somebody's performing it rather than waiting 8 years to see it in print.
Yeah. You mention in your memoir that first song,
Love Heals, and it has a bridge that for me could be a whole life philosophy. I love this body that's not the way I thought. I love these people who help me in the dark. I love this life that keeps me waking up.
You have a poem in Landed called I Love This Body That's Not the Way I Thought. Would you like to read that?
Sure. I love this body that's not the way I thought. I love this body that's not the way I thought, like I love storms, or at least the surprise from behind windows or out in fields and their aftermath. Horizons balancing blue sky, thunderheads, nothing. Stretched out like my arms reaching two directions at once. I love the possibilities inherent in motion and extension. The miles of sidewalk or faint path in the open field made by deer with genius for merging visible. I love the way the subway car sways its song along my spine as it cups this body in its seat. The flash of yearning that makes us turn toward the shimmying branches of sex even when we're tired. The seasons that come and go as well as came and went. The mechanisms of cell building and the three children from that flint-on-flint spark. The fast, slim legs that galloped me down long apartment hallways as a girl. And the girl who knew how to curl in a ball and hold herself a safe ship in the loneliness, just as the woman she became, who can wake from that old crescendo of pain and put on her walking shoes, head out into the sky that starts at her every step.
Karen Miriam Goldberg, reading from her book Landed at Kansas Public Radio with just a little bit of music from Kelly Hunt. For links, go to newletters.org, a production of New Letters Magazine at UMKC. This show was produced with Jamie Walsh, Tim Larson, Anju Christopher, and Abby Jamison. I'm Angela Elam for New Letters on the Air.